The next presentation is Rapid Entry Longwall Development with Continuous Haulage at Murray Energy's Marion County Mine, presented by Toby Kressman and Michelle Burich of Komatsu. Toby Kressman is the Global Product Manager of Room and Pillar Products at Komatsu Mining. He has worked for Komatsu for 10 years. He holds his Bachelor of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering from Bucknell University and Master's in Business Administration from Gannon University. While working at Komatsu, he has focused a majority of his time on the development of their batch and continuous haulage products. Michelle is Senior Mining Applications Engineer for Komatsu. Burich has more than 10 years of mining experience, having worked for Foundation Coal, Alpha Natural Resources, and the Mine Safety and Health Administration's Ventilation Technical Support Division. She obtained her Bachelor of Science degree in Geological Engineering from South Dakota School of Mining and Technology and her Postgraduate Mining Engineering Certificate from the University of Pittsburgh. At Komatsu, she works primarily with the continuous mining and entry development teams to develop productivity estimates and underground mining system evaluations.
Thank you, Eric. Good morning. As Eric mentioned, I'm Toby Kressman, and I'm the Global Product Manager for Room Pillar Products. And congratulations for making it to day four of the show. You know, it's a long, long grind here. So for years and years, long walls are getting faster, more efficient, we're mining faster. But where technology has really lagged is in the development rates. So today we're here to talk about our rapid entry development system, which consists of our 14ED, 25, and our FCT. The benefits of these equipment are increased productivity and increased safety. Productivity, because we can bolt, cut, and convey simultaneously, and safety, because we're bolting and rib bolting in place, and we're removing some of the moving parts from the section. Today I have the easy part. I'm going to talk about our equipment, the system, and some of the project planning aspects of it, and then Michelle is going to dive into the application engineering, the time studies, and all the data that supports why we do what we do. So the mine we're working with today is Marion County in West Virginia. It is a Murray Energy mine, formerly Love Ridge Mine of Consol. Longwall mine, they have several entry development sections, several main sections. They have roughly 470 employees underground, 560 total. And they produce roughly 6 million U.S. tons a year. So I have to admit, I'm not an ED expert. As noted, I'm mainly a haulage guy. But on the screen here, you see the ED going through its sump and shear cycle. It is a sump frame style machine with about a 4-foot sump or 1.2 meters. Rib bolting, or roof bolting at the front, and then rib bolting off the back of the machine. You can see it going through its cycle there. It has two roof bolts, two rib bolts, and then the ATRSs to protect the operators and help put up the straps. It is controlled through our face boss control system, so that does allow for a common platform between our EDs, our miners, our haulage equipment for future development and communication. So we'll bring up an animation here. So playing from the ISO view here, you can see the ED extending its drums and wings because it is a full face machine. The ATRS is going to the roof, and then the machine going through its 4-foot sump cycle there. This animation just shows the ability to have customized sump and shear cycles to meet your conditions and your productivity needs. You see then the roof bolts and the strap going in. All right, now it's good. Here's a side view of the same animation. see the roof bolts going in, the frame sumping in. So you can see there how the machine can cut and bolt while the sump frame sumps in, the bolts stay in place. And then off the back of the machine, we don't have a great animation of the rib bolters, but you can see the pictures here below, the flexibility that the rib bolters have to hit various spots depending on your bolting requirements. Again, not an ED expert, so if you want to challenge me with any questions, I'll likely defer to Jez there. When it comes to the SCT, what is the SCT? It's a flexible conveyor train. Some people get confused and think it's an accordion and it magically changes and alters length. That's not the case. It's a fixed length machine working in conjunction with the DMU, which we'll go into a bit detail here in a minute. But it is a single operator system. There's one operator at the end by end of the machine that sets the path. You can see the operator there standing next to the hopper. Material is cut from the ED machine, fed into the hopper of the FCT. The FCT has a conveyor chain with a lump breaker to size the material. It then goes onto the FCT belt and is conveyed out of the mine onto the section panel belt. It can do roughly 25 metric tons a minute at a typical coal density. It is VFD controlled through the material flow process. So depending on your needs, you can speed up the conveyor and the belt to run it as fast or as slow as needed to match the miner's sump and shear cycle. We do have various options to meet customer-specific needs. We have put bolters on the end-by-end of the FCT for certain applications. We have put wet dusters on the end-by-end of the FCT for various applications. It is flexible not only in its design, but also in its operation. So I mentioned the DMU. The DMU is the dynamic move-up unit. So we have to make sure we think of the FCT and the DMU as a system. Right now, we're rolling back the FCT, and you'll see it here shortly tramming on to the DMU. So this is the ramp of the DMU and the tail pulley and the rest of the system. This chute here is how the material is transferred from the FCT to your mine panel belt. This gray belt here would simulate the mine panel belt. So as the FCT is following the ED through the cut sequence, this back end is tramming back and forth along the back of the DMU, or sometimes also referred to as the roadway. We do have various types of DMUs, but for the gate road development application where you're in tighter entries, the over-the-top system is really the only viable option. And right now you need roughly an 8-foot seam to put in the over-the-top option. So some points I want to emphasize here. While the FCT is flexible, it is also a system that requires the right conditions to operate. You know, Komatsu or myself will never stand here and say that the FCT is for everybody. It is. It takes an amount of ownership from the customer, and you can see the points here. You know, it really requires a longwall mentality. It's not a shuttle car section where if a shuttle car goes down, you can take it out of operation, put another one in. When the FCT is down, you are down. Development stops. So it does take an amount of maintenance focus and ownership and a mentality that you stay on top of. Also from the maintenance standpoint, there's also some ownership from the workforce. As Zach mentioned earlier, how do operators accept autonomous anything? You know, as we're removing operators from the face, how is it accepted by the workforce? And in some of the tougher applications where we put in FCTs, that can be a challenge to overcome. We also highlight communication between shifts from a maintenance aspect. If one shift keeps moving the belt out and the next shift comes in and moves the belt out further on the FCT, that can be a very expensive practice that can hurt your equipment and drive up your operating costs. So you really need that communication between shifts and one person to really own the FCT operation. I also highlight disciplined section choreography. So once that FCT is behind the ED in the cut, you do not want to back it back out. So have we properly stocked the machines? Have we stocked the ED with bolts and straps? Are our curtains hung where they need to be? Because once we're cutting, we don't want to stop. So there is some discipline that's required there around the section. And then finally, out by support. You know, we don't want to put an FCT into a mine where you're bolting delayed and your ventilation problems and you have poor out by belt availability, because the value gained won't be there. So there is some making sure that everything out by of what's going on in the FCT is up to speed. With that, I'll hand things over to Michelle.
Thank you, Toby. I appreciate that. And we're going to go directly into the next step. So our engineering teams, they come up with the configuration for the FCT, and where application engineering comes in to play is that we will try to encompass all of that operations, ins and outs, into what we call a viable productivity model. This animation is kind of a depiction of what this section looks like with an FCT in it. So this is a typical three-entry gate road development. You have your return entry to the left. Your middle is your intake, and then the belt entry is an entry three. So it does change what the typical operations are used to, because now you have this fixed unit. If you can see, the 14ED25 finishes number one. It backs out. The FCT follows and, of course, sets up in entry two. It'll mine entry two all the way up to distance, which these mines are typically 200-foot centers. Everything backs out. And then, of course, the belt entry, number three, is mined the same way, driven up to distance, backed up, turns the crosscut, then backs out. The FCT then joins the 14, and this is kind of a significant thing. I mean, you're going to ask, why didn't it just drive all the way across? But think what you have to have on the machine for bolting. So that's a good point to kind of take a break and resupply before you do the cut through. So that is one complete cycle. At that point, you're ready for an FCT move up, which it will back completely out, up and onto the ramp. Everything gets set up to start the new cycle, and then you just go. So going back to the application engineering, each of these pieces of equipment, you can call it general, but it's actually not. So we want to make sure that we understand what this operation looks like, how it operates, what are the typical delays, what are your availabilities, how often does your belts go down, how often does your mine power go down? So we take all those availabilities, we take all of the in-cycle delays, and then we kind of look at what the operators are doing currently. So sometimes we have a similar machine, sometimes not. In this circumstance, they did not have a 14ED25 at Marion County, but they had one at Harrison. So the information was taken from that machine, and we kind of applied it to a similar operation at Marion. And then the depiction here, it basically is just a little snippet of some of the information that we use to kind of start the model. And these were all data that were taken from the time studies. And then we actually were fortunate enough to have one that Marion County had done, and we compared to see how we aligned, and it actually was pretty good. So then we have a result. Once we put everything together, we kind of take into consideration that 14ED25 sump and shear cycle. We look at how the operator is going to run the machine. So if it's a new guy, his efficiencies are not going to be as good as an experienced operator. So we can actually adjust that cycle down accordingly to his experience. Then we produce what we call a shift analysis. So from all the information that we can spit out from the model, we put it on one of these charts and we can show you at a glance from your available time, this is how much incremental times are spent for each of those activities. And then you wind up with this overall cutting time. So what's significant here is that these are average delays. And this is like a snippet of time. Is it going to be that way every day? We know that does not happen. So we think on average, this is what we could expect. Above that, I know it's a little light, but you can look at the percent of time that each of those have. The cutting time is almost 40%. So 40% of the 8 hour, you know, needs to be dedicated to your cutting. And if it doesn't happen, then you know the blocks in red, they're going to have more there. So you're going to have the decreased time. We can take that and we can actually in the future look at vamping up the system. We can look at increasing efficiencies. We can decrease some of the delays by maybe speeding up some of the in-cycle move. So we can look at how we can change and how we can improve certain aspects. So for our cycle for Marion County, we come up with an ultimate, a 2.55-minute cycle for the machine. So that means this particular machine does a 4.6-foot sump and shear. It's in three different sump and shear cycles. We observe that it could do this in 2.55 minutes. That would put us on average at 225 per shift, and that's where they basically started. So just to give you an idea, this is 2 weeks after startup, and this is only we're only showing here the 5 days. But the significance is this. This is a brand new machine. It's a brand new haulage. And these guys, if you can look for at 12.6, they were already getting close to that 225 in green. Another significant thing is we can see that when they have few delays, so the delays are kind of that black and gray interbar. When those delays are, we're seeing like significant high minutes or hours of delay, then we don't have as much cutting. When we can limit that as of 12.6 and 12.7, then of course our productivity is higher. The production did begin in mid-November. They were doing, the schedule was 6 days a week, so the mine is idle on a Sunday. They do not work. And they ran with 2 hours per shift. I mean, two 8-hour shifts per day. And then they were having the midnight crew was doing the maintenance. Some of the highlights, the top producing shifts are highlighted in the yellow box, and you can see that there were days that they did well over their 225 goal, as high as 340 feet per shift. But the overall average for that month was 174 feet per shift, so we're about 23% below that 225, but still significant. I mean, coming from one of the operations, I know that we didn't really see those types of shifts with our systems. This was actually a, kind of a representation of a benchmark survey that I went back to the mine and performed, and that's after the operators are comfortable with the equipment. We want to see, has anything improved? Are there still issues? And so we want to look and see how it compares to the original productivity model. The productivity model is in blue. The Harrison County timings off their 14ED25 is in red. And then underneath, you have our time study comparison from Marion County. At this point in time, they were running now 3 shifts per day. We did go to kind of a, it's a maintenance, and they kind of float that. It's 2 times a week, and it just depends on, you know, which days they're going to optimize it. So it's not set in stone. The top crew was mining that week on day shift, which was extraordinary. So if you look at the overall comparison, we're still relatively close, but one thing that will stand out was the fact that you had a mining cycle in adverse conditions. That was the significant part of this, and it's critical to understand the system. So in the Pittsburgh 8, you know, sometimes you have wonderful entries. Everything is pristine and perfect. You've got a perfect coal roof. And then you get into what we call an adverse condition, and you start seeing these clay veins that appear. And these things are just like clay intrusions. The coal that typically is adjacent to is slick and sided, so everything kind of wants to fall down. It becomes a nightmare for the bolters on the machine, so everything gets slow, and that's what was happening. So we were having that intermittent clay veining in the roof. We were also seeing some really hard cutting conditions for the 14, and these were, they commonly refer to them as sulfur balls because they really stink when they're getting cut, but these things were like footballs. We were cutting them in a coal seam. We also had a little bit of a delay, a little bit of a lapse from our entry-to-entry move time, which definitely could have been tightened up and I think has since this point, and that we were still seeing some decreased availabilities on our equipment, the FCT and 14ED25, we were still kind of working through some things there, so that did cause an issue as well. But if you look at the overall, think about where it started in December, 2 weeks after. Now if you look at the top producing shifts, we're at 309 feet. We're at 272. We're at 301. The average is still around 170, and so we're still down from that 225. But we're seeing significant as far as uptick in the feet per shift. Now, in April, they did some streamlining. So they recognized that there were some issues, some things that they could do better. They did that. The operators continually get better. Now that they're feeling good with the machine, they're really doing the sump and shear cycles. It's like right on the money. And some of those adverse conditions, they improved somewhat. We had a production record set in April for this particular machine, and it was 361 feet in that one shift. Also phenomenal for the day, each shift went over their 225 foot per shift goal, with a total of 869 feet mined for that day. So going back to where we talk about delays versus cutting time, this is just a brief example of the significance of minimizing all the delays in cycle, in keeping the belts running out by. When you have that mining time around 39% of the first pie, you can see that that's pretty much the big color that you see, and you do see some of these, which are kind of day-to-day. You're going to have them. But everything else is kind of like really, really low as far as overall percent of the time. That shift, they were able to do 248 feet. If you look at the other pie, now our mining time is a smaller section of green, and you have everything else that's kind of taken up that whole pie. In particular, you had significant bolting delays due to the adverse conditions, and it decreased the feet per shift to 72. So the time does matter. For an overall system comparison, so I've been pretty straightforward. I showed that we could do 225 per shift in the model. It did not happen that way. We have seen shifts higher than the 225, and we've seen shifts lower. But if you look at overall advancement rates, we're about 40% above what the previous minor bolter shuttle car operation had been. That's significant in gate road advancement because, of course, you've got a long wall that's breathing down your neck. So you want to get this thing finished, and you want to give them some time for that long wall to get moved over and set up, and you lose none of the production. So we see that as a very positive. We know that we're doing better than the system that was in place previously, and I think that there's definitely room for growth. And I will note that the comparison where you see the minor bolter loading machine and the two shuttle car, those were actually the highest averages of those developments during 2018. So I was very fair about it, and this is our straight averages from February, March, and April of this year. So still relatively a new system. Overall comparison, I think, really good. And I'm going to hand this over to Toby and let him finish everything up for you guys. Thank you.
So just to summarize here a bit, what Michelle talked through and went through on the application team side there, the productivity model and that waterfall chart really do become the backbone of the project. It's our front end, what equipment should we provide to a mine, and the design process is what can we design out in terms of delays. And in the back end, where we are now with the Marion County, we're going back and checking when we're not getting the productivity we thought we could, how are we refining that, going after those delays, and making the system better. So just highlighting that, Michelle will tell you that she does models all the time for all these mines, and this is really one of those stories where we've tied it all together and done it on the front, the middle, and the back end there. And like Michelle just highlighted, we are seeing great gains in Marion County. Every mine wants to ramp up the FCT faster. We have other FCT customers here. It's not always as easy as it may seem, and the Marion County team has done a great job from where they were in November to where they are now. Something to be proud of, to be honest, and they did a lot of prep work to be prepared to get these increases they are seeing. And then finally, on this back end, it is a continual loop. We're feeding back into our models, we're feeding back into the systems to make the next mine better, to know more about our models and validate them with better accuracy. And we are seeing a lot of refinement from the team here in getting those models accurate. So with that, I would like to throw a few acknowledgments out there. First of all, to Marion County, the Murray Energy team in general. There's a lot of names up there. A lot of people have been involved in this project, and it's been great. The access that they've given Michelle to the mine and the time studies and the data they've shared. And Michelle didn't put her own name up there, but she has done a lot of work. Like I said, I had the easy part of this presentation. Michelle and her application team have spent a lot of time down at Marion County doing time studies, time underground. And then you can see all the names up there from our side as well. But again, just thank you to Marion County and thank you to Michelle for all the work you've done to pull this together. With that, any questions?
Can you say it again?
Well, if the system that you have in Marion County now, I look at it, is it a five-cycle cutting? Is that the one that, that's the only sequence this system can work?
For Marion County, you're talking about the cutting sequence for the machine?
Uh-huh.
Or are you talking about the overall cutting cycle for the entries?
No, the system you have there now.
Right.
Is that just for a specific cutting sequence that you designed for it? You cannot change the sequence?
You can change. So what kind of fixes that development for an FCT is how you orientate the crosscuts. So if you had, like, say, a three-entry to a four-entry system, you can actually have that for the various entries. You have to make sure the length is going to be correct, that your pillars and your entries are... But it's basically fixing those crosscuts so that you can move. But no, it can vary. And it doesn't really matter to our system whether or not. It just has to be optimized for that FCT.
Yeah, maybe I missed the video that part. In the last cut, you do have a stop and then change the return the FCT over to the second entry to cut. And you have some stop there. Why would that be?
So if you think about, like, if you start at the number one entry, and then when we show the machine backing out, there's a lot that we didn't show in the animation that happens. So that distance is approximately 200 to 20 to 30 feet total. So after you've mined that all the way up, you're exhausted on supplies. So when the machine backs out of number one and kind of moves over to number two, what happens there is a ventilation change. So they typically are going to move an auxiliary fan. They're going to rehang tube if they need to. And they're going to also put that entry that was just mined. They're going to clean it up with a scoop. They're going to dust it. And then they're going to hang vent curtain all the way to the face so that that face is ventilated in that entry. So there's a lot happens. And then they supply. Then they have to bring all the supplies in, and they're going to restock it with the channel, the bolts, the plates, and the resin, and then they're ready to mine. So that's part of their normal sequence. So every time they finish one of those entries, they're going to do that every time.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
The other one I got, look at the FCT. How long is that?
So we have FCTs ranging from 200 feet in length or 60 meters up to 575 feet, roughly 175 meters at Yulon West.
It's simply you have in the certain section, you have the rubber bump or something, so it wouldn't be bump the corner of the pillar or that. But if what would happen then if all the time is a bump into the corner of the all the different, would it, that doesn't matter at all?
If it bumps into the rib
or
the mine?
Yeah.
So the FCT, wherever you steer the end-by-end of the FCT, the rest of the train follows it in forward and reverse by mechanical design. So it can creep, but generally if it does get out of whack, you just back it back onto the DMU or the roadway and pull back out, and it straightens itself out. But it's designed not to pull into the turns or push out of the turns.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.